So someone sends me an email with a link to an old TNA home video commercial.
TNA presents a side of Mick Foley you've never seen before.
Then they cut to Kurt Angle.
I am scared that he is going to be remembered as the hardcore legend. That doesn't define Mick Foley.
Kurt's got a good point. You know, Mick Foley shouldn't be remembered as just the hardcore legend. I mean, I'm sure TNA would agree.
TNA Home Video presents Mick Foley, hardcore legend.
God damn it!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered a streak!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Welcome to episode 386 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, June 7th, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. Hope everybody's having a great weekend. I am on my way out in a few hours to the Legends of Wrestling show at Citi Field with the New York Mets play. And they're going to have a Legends show with Ric Flair, with Goldberg, Bret Hart. I think Rob Van Dam is going to be actually wrestling. The Nasty Boys are wrestling Aces and Eights. I could not believe that when I saw that. I saw Aces and Eights on the lineup. I'm like, are you shitting me? Can I get my money back, please, for these tickets? Aces and Eights? I thought we were done with this. I don't even know who are going to make up the members of Aces and Eights. Probably Wes Briscoe and Garrett Bischoff or some bullshit like that. But anyway, it should be interesting, and I'll tweet some photos from the event. Maybe if some of you are there, I'll even bump into some of you guys. But we may have to cut things a little short at the tail end of the show, so that means no mailbag this week. But there is no shortage of things to get to. I am going to talk a little bit about Elimination Chamber, just because it goes into some stuff on John Cena that I have to get off my chest. And we're going to talk about the Wednesday Night Wars, the first official Ring of Honor review ever of their television show on the Sound Off this week. That's fun. And Impact as well. And I'll have some thoughts on Jessica Havoc at the end. So you'll definitely want to stick around for the very end of the show as well. But first, Audible is offering listeners of the Sound Off a free audiobook of your choice, along with a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. Choose from over 180,000 titles, among them Chris Jericho's most recent book, Shawn Michaels' new book, Hulk Hogan's book, bunch of books. Just punch in our URL, audibletrial.com/solomonster. That is audibletrial.com/solomonster. Get yourself a free book on us. And also, thank you to the people who have checked out the new It Didn't Happen shirt in our Pro Wrestling Tee store, prowrestlingtees.com/solomonstersoundsoff. You can get the new shirt. You know, I'm kind of kicking myself now because I wish I had bought one of my, kind of the New York Mets style Sound Off shirts. There's two versions of it up in the store. That would have been perfect to wear today. I'm pissed off now. But you can get that and a whole bunch of other shirts in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. And also, if you want to make a PayPal donation to the show, it is entirely up to you. You may do so on thesolomonster.com. There is a PayPal box on the right side of the page. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. $30 or more will get you not only a nickname, but a shout-out for your podcast, YouTube channel, or what have you. So just make sure you include that information when you make the donation. Thank you. Big thank you this week to Guilty as Charged Mark Court, Hot Stuff, Hector Pena, Man Up, Manny Alcantara, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, Jerry Flapjack Flores, The Florida Freebird, Bryant Becerra, The Virginia Beach Bonebreaker, Jonathan Cross, Rashid the Reaper, Al-Rumahi, The Deacon of Disaster, Omar Ali, The Maryland Misfit, Dom LaMartina, No Mercy, Nick Horasek, and The Last Outlaw, Andrew Gelinas, host of the Valiant Vision Network of podcasts, Sports with Van being among them, as well as a wrestling show coming soon. You can check him out at valiantvision.podbean.com. Thank you to everybody who made a donation. I very much appreciate it. Now, last week I told you that I was going to take a poll. I was going to take a poll in our closed group on Facebook, so if you're not in there yet, get on in there. Asking you guys, which show would you prefer to see reviewed every week? Because I can't do this every week where I review every single show. I'm not doing it. So Would you prefer to have TNA Impact reviews as we've had for years? Now, I know I've missed some weeks recently, but now with the move to Wednesdays, it should be at least a little bit easier for me to watch the show. So, would you want to hear Impact reviewed, or do you want to hear Ring of Honor reviewed? Now, that was never intended to mean that I would completely drop one or the other from the podcast. Obviously, I'm going to cover TNA news if there's any sort of breaking TNA news, great news, bad news, whatever it is. And also, you know, I never said that I wouldn't give my thoughts on Impact if I happened to watch it in a given week. I'm just not going to do a formal match-by-match, blow-by-blow, segment-by-segment review. It's one or the other, TNA or ROH. And much like the Destination America situation, Destination America showing TNA no love, neither are the members of the Sound Off Nation. Over 560 of you, in a poll in our Facebook group, voted on which show you would prefer to see reviewed here on this show every week, and by an overwhelming margin, 524 votes to 47 votes, you voted for Ring of Honor over TNA. I have not seen such a lopsided result since last year's SummerSlam main event. So there will be regular ROH reviews on the Sound Off going forward for the very first time. This has been a long time coming. I know you guys, a lot of you guys have been asking for this for the longest time. I did not have Ring of Honor here on television. Of course, you can find it online, but it's just a lot easier when it's on TV or you can put it on the DVR, what have you. So again, that does not mean I will not watch any of Impact from now on ever again. It just means that ROH will for sure be reviewed every week here on the show. There will still be a TNA presence. So for those of you who are concerned about that, whether you're the kind of person who just loves to hear bad news when it comes to TNA and hear me dump on them, or for those TNA fans who genuinely want my thoughts on whatever the hell is going on, you don't have to worry about that. I did watch all of the shows this week. I figure it's week one. I've got to try to watch all of it. So I did watch all of the shows from Wednesday. I'll have some thoughts on Impact. Not a full review, but for the most part, what I saw, I liked. I can't dislike a show that has a match as good as the one between the Wolves and the Dirty Heels. So we'll get to that a little bit later. But first, Elimination Chamber was last Sunday from Corpus Christi. I thought overall it was a very good show, despite the crowd, which I told you. Did I not call that? Corpus Christi lived up to its reputation as what one of you tweeted me during the show. Corpses Christi. I thought that was a great name. You may as well have stuck a corpse in every seat for most of that show. It's just a notoriously terrible city. You know, even Raw on Monday, they were in San Antonio. And again, you could hear the air conditioner running at different points during the show. You know, it's like, hey, Texas, wake up. I hope you're not like this for WrestleMania next year. The other thing that struck me about this show, and this was hilarious, given what I talked about on the Sound on 385 last weekend, it was the same day. I recorded the podcast earlier that same day, and what was one of the things I talked about when I was talking about Lucha Underground? I said one of the things I appreciate about Lucha Underground is the fact that they don't do replays. It's very, very rare that you will see the show interrupted by replays. In fact, the first replay I've ever seen on Lucha Underground was last week's show when they showed Mil Muertes powerbombing Phoenix through the roof of the balcony up there. And that was definitely replay worthy. WWE, on the other hand, they go nuts. They take it to the extreme. I mean, I like a replay of a cool move every now and then, but they just go overboard with it to the max. That was before the Elimination Chamber show. So then we have Elimination Chamber, and every 5 seconds there's a replay. I mean, literally, it felt like every single move they would air a replay of. Oh, this guy got clotheslined. Let's show you a replay. Let's use our slow motion camera to show you the impact of the clothesline. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Enough with the replays. So anyway, that was definitely noticeable. I know I wasn't the only one who was bothered by that. It is a bad habit that they have. Don't abuse it. They feel like they have to abuse it. We have these great camera angles, and we can show it like in what was in the old Max Payne video games. What was it like bullet mode or whatever it was called, like slow motion, right? They feel like we have the technology, and so therefore we have to do it. No, you don't have to do it. How about one? One replay per match. That should be the quota in WWE. But of course, we have Money in the Bank coming up in a week, so get ready for 350 replays. The two key matches on the show I thought delivered, John Cena versus Kevin Owens, was match of the year candidate, not match of the year, not the match of the year, but it's up there on one of the more enjoyable matches in WWE this year. Tag title chamber match, you know, it had its moments. I don't know what the hell happened. It was just a cluster, just a giant cluster. I went back and I watched some of the more cringeworthy parts of it, like Kalisto on top of one of the pods looking like he was about to jump off, and then he just stood there and stood there and stood there. And to be fair, I don't think it was entirely his fault. It looked like New Day was in the pod below him and they were supposed to like grab his foot, and they weren't grabbing his foot. But it wasn't the only awkward Kalisto moment in that match. You know, he just looked completely lost out there. He was the last person I would have expected to look lost in that kind of match. But he did. He crapped the bed, unfortunately. The Intercontinental Title Chamber match was horrendously boring. But I am happy for the Ryback. It looked like it just meant so much to him to win that title. And it showed. He cut a great promo on .com that I'm sure most of you never saw and will never see, because it was on .com and not on the pay-per-view. But, you know, that's the one thing they don't do anymore. They don't do post-match interviews. You know, guys standing in front of a backdrop, looking into the camera. You know, I sound like Steve Austin now when I talk about this, but, you know, back in my day. But no, seriously, I mean, they should do more of that. They kind of did that with Kevin Owens, but I want to see real post-match interviews in the back. That's what I want to see more of. Mark Henry was the big replacement for Rusev, who was out with an ankle injury, and he did absolutely nothing during the match. He was a complete waste. R-Truth was a complete waste. Although he did pin King Barrett. R-Truth pinned the King yet again. Worst King since Bowser, this fucking guy. No Tyler Breeze in the chamber, which bummed me out. One of our listeners, David, over in the UK, emailed me to let me know that on his podcast, it might have been that same weekend, Taz had a suggestion for who he thought should replace Rusev in the chamber after we learned that day that Rusev would be out. He was not medically cleared. And who did Taz suggest? Tyler Breeze. I guess great minds think alike. That makes two of us who were disappointed then. I thought they dropped the ball on Naomi. You know, it felt like this was it. This was her time. If they're going to put the title on her, it's now or never. But as many of you pointed out, I didn't realize this, but What they appear to be doing is they are wanting Nikki Bella to break AJ Lee's record of longest reigning Divas champion. 295 days AJ Lee spent as the Divas champion. Nikki's just short of 200 days right now. So I have a feeling she's keeping that belt for a while. You know, it's funny to me, they did the same thing in 2004 when they had Randy Orton beat Benoit at SummerSlam to win the world title, so they didn't have to refer to Brock Lesnar as the youngest reigning WWE champion anymore. I mean, this was the world title, not the WWE title, but, you know, it's all the same. And, you know, Brock had left the company on bad terms, and before that, he had been the youngest reigning champion they had ever had. And so now that Randy Orton won the belt, and he was like 20, I don't know what he was, 22 maybe when he won at 23, you know, they could refer to him as the youngest reigning champion. So Orton won it, and then he dropped it right back to Triple H the very next month. It was almost like that was the only reason they had him win that championship, was so that they can call him the youngest reigning champion. And then he got, the term I like to use for it is Randy Orton was H'd. He was H'd the month after. And that's when the plan had been for Randy Orton to kind of be built back up and beat Triple H for the title of WrestleMania 21, and we all know how that turned out. They did this stupid concussion storyline where Randy Orton would always be concussed, and he would have this glassy-eyed look on his face. And Triple H beat him again and beat him again in some, I think it was a Last Man Standing match, maybe, at the Royal Rumble. And Batista was the hot hand, and plans change, and Batista got the belt instead. We had an excellent main event between Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. We had a dusty finish. You know, again, for those of you, I'm sure you're all well aware of why it's called the dusty finish. He didn't invent it. He didn't come up with it. It wasn't his idea. But when he was a booker back in Crockett, Dusty Rhodes had a tendency to overuse the Dusty Finish, which is why it then got the name the Dusty Finish, because it's fine if you do it once here and there, but he was doing it every month, and that's not a good thing to be doing. So everybody thought Dean Ambrose won the championship. I was stunned. I thought he won the championship, and then they did the old deal where second referee is talking to the first referee, and the first referee is like, no, 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 it's a disqualification, I got knocked out. And so Seth Rollins is still the champion, but they're doing a deal now where Dean Ambrose has stolen. He is a thief. He has stolen the championship. But I got to tell you, you know, I don't know if it's the leather jacket or what it is. Every time I see Dean Ambrose with that WWE title, he looks good with it. I gotta say, he actually, it looks like a good fit for him. Now, the fact that he stole it, and he's in possession of it, and he's the one carrying it around for these 2 weeks between pay-per-views, I don't think Dean Ambrose is going to be the one taking that title down from the ceiling when they have their ladder match next Sunday. So, enjoy the visual while it lasts, because I suspect it will not last much longer. I also have to say this about Roman Reigns. BFF Roman Reigns is the best kind of Roman Reigns. The dude looks so happy when he is out there with Dean Ambrose. When he's saving him, when he's hanging out with him. I'll get the beers. He's sticking his tongue out. He's got a big smile on his face. I don't know how long that's going to last, but I like Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns as best friends. So then we get to John Cena and Kevin Owens. I was stunned, as many of you were, over the finish, in a good way. I was surprised in a good way. Kevin Owens made a statement, I think, to a lot of people who didn't think he had it in him to have that kind of match, especially on night one. Oh, he's fat. Oh, he's going to be gassed. Oh, he's not going to look good. He's not going to pull that indie shit with John Cena. Dude's the real deal. Kevin Owens is the real deal. He never looked gassed to me at any point. No more gassed than anybody would look in any, you know, regular match. He took some great bumps, especially off the clotheslines. John Cena gave him a clothesline at one point, turned him inside out. I will say that was the best replay of the 500 they showed during the show. Was one of those clotheslines. It just turned Owens inside out. It was awesome. The little quick jump he did from the middle to the top rope before the moonsault I thought was great. He knew this was the match of his life, and he delivered in every possible way. He could not have had a more perfect match for his first time in. You know, anything could have gone wrong. You know, look at Sami Zayn. He tore his shoulder getting warmed up for his match with John Cena, throwing his arms up in the air. And as a result, the match wasn't as good as it could have been. It was good, but it could have been so much better. You know, Owens, I thought he just nailed it. John Cena put him over clean as a sheet. No fuck finish, no ref bump, no outside distraction, no hooking the tights, no fans to complain that, oh, you know, like in the match with Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam, well, John Cena had an arm injury. His arm was all wrapped up, and that was his weakness, and so that was his excuse. No excuse. There was none of that this time. John Cena helped make this guy a star in one night to an audience that may not have known who Kevin Steen was. You know, I'm sure there were plenty of people in Corpus Christi that night who looked at this guy and said, who the fuck is this guy? Look at John Cena, look at him. Why should I care about him? Well, I'll tell you one way you can get people to care about somebody. You have them beat the other guy clean. And then giving him promo time after the match, I thought, made it even better. So instead of just cutting to the next segment, they actually put a mic in his hand. John Cena left, and Kevin Owens talked some trash. And they did not waste any time in announcing a rematch. The rematch is going to be next weekend at Money in the Bank. Yes, there is already another pay-per-view, believe it or not. I'm not against seeing them wrestle again because they had a hell of a match here, and I think they will again. I just think it's way too soon, but that's what happens. That's what happens when you book a pay-per-view every other week. So, it is what it is. Despite all of this, there were plenty of people, no shortage of people, criticizing John Cena when this match was over. Holy shit, were they criticizing John Cena? He rolled out of the ring too quickly when the match was over. He didn't sell it enough. As opposed to, I guess, you know, pulling a Hogan and hogging all the spotlight from Kevin Owens. Which, believe me, if John Cena would have stuck around like he did with Bryan, remember that? SummerSlam, after that match, John Cena got up, he spun Bryan around, he was talking to him, he shook his hand. Believe me, if John Cena did that here with Kevin Owens, first of all, it wouldn't make much sense because Kevin Owens is a heel. He's a dick who attacked Cena from behind multiple times. You know, Bryan at least was a babyface, so, you know, John Cena was almost endorsing him as the new champion when that happened. But believe me, if John Cena did that and went to shake Kevin Owens' hand, people would have crapped all over John Cena. Oh, he's stealing his moment. I guarantee you that would have been the criticism. I thought he showed great deference to Kevin Owens. You know, it wasn't about John Cena. It was about Kevin Owens. Now, I will agree with one thing. It does look a little ridiculous when guys get knocked out and they get pinned, and then immediately they roll out of the ring like, you know, nothing ever happened. But you know what? That's not a John Cena thing. That's a WWE thing. That's a wrestling thing. This has been going on for years. Go back and watch the finish. I just watched this match recently. Go back and watch the finish of the Iron Man match. You don't have to watch the whole thing. Rock and Triple H. Judgment Day 2000. Find it on the network. Okay? This goes back to the your precious Attitude era. When Undertaker rides to the ring for the very first time as the American Badass. Right before he gets into the ring, they show a shot of the ring with Triple H in there and all the members of the McMahon-Helmsley faction. And Triple H gives Rock a pedigree, and Rock immediately rolls out to the apron. He's not knocked out. He's not laid out. He rolls. He rolls out to the apron. This is not just isolated to the current roster. Everybody does it. I don't like it, but everybody does it. If that sort of thing bothers you, I mean, you know, it's a valid criticism, but I think people were using it as a criticism of Cena. And believe me, there are plenty of things to criticize John Cena for, okay? His horrendous punches, his loud spot calling. I love that Kayfabe News article where they said John Cena was going to start using a megaphone in his matches so that his opponent can more clearly hear the spots, as they're called. He's not the most graceful guy in the ring. You know, in fact, I think he's pretty clumsy looking, especially when he tries the Hurricane Ranas, which is thankfully why he doesn't do them very often. But to complain over something like that after a match that good is just, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. It is a clear agenda against the man. I thought John Cena was fantastic in that match. Kevin Owens was fantastic in that match. They both played their roles perfectly. I had one troll try to convince me that John Cena brought nothing to the match. Nothing. Not a single thing. He was just there. And Kevin Owens did all the work. Who do you think was calling the damn match? I know who, because he was so loud I could hear every spot before it even happened. It was John Cena. He was the ring general in there. If you thought that match was good, if you enjoyed that match, you are admitting that John Cena had as much to do with that as Kevin Owens because he called the damn match. John Cena has had tons of classic matches throughout his career. I've written about this before. I wrote a whole column on it, listing what I thought were John Cena's like top 10 best matches, I think it was. I did that years ago on the Layfield Report, and I don't think that article's online anymore, unfortunately. But I did this whole list. You know, and many of those matches were with excellent workers, I will grant you. CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, Rob Van Dam, Shawn Michaels, you know, Edge, Randy Orton, Batista, who's also very good. But guess what? Every single one of those guys has had tons of shitty matches in their career also. They're not miracle workers. I've always been fair in my criticism of John Cena. I honestly try to be as fair as I can to the guy. When he really pisses me off with his promos or whatever, I say it. When he has a great match, I say it. But I have to tell you, it was eye-opening for me this week. I was embarrassed to be a wrestling fan after Elimination Chamber and Raw on Monday night when it came to the John Cena hate that I saw. And the people who go on and on and on about the guy, you know who they are. You know, it's like he fucked their girlfriend while eating a pastrami sandwich out of their own fridge. You would think John Cena personally wronged these people in some way. They're almost as bad as the mentally ill TNA fans who flipped their lid on Meltzer. Which leads me to Raw on Monday night. I'm going to get right into this here. So Kevin Owens came out and cut a promo on John Cena. He said when he called home last night, his son asked him if John was okay. Because his son is legitimately a huge John Cena fan. So I like that they've injected a little dose of reality like that into the storyline. He said his son had been manipulated by WWE's marketing machine. Owens has traveled the world. I've been busting his ass for 15 years. And yet John Cena is a hero to his son simply because he's been on television every week for the last 10 years. He called John Cena a broken, empty shell of a man. So that brought out John Cena for a promo that you would think, based on a lot of the reaction I've seen online, started with him spitting on the American flag and ended with him slapping a Make-A-Wish kid in the face. That's how over-the-top absurd the reaction has been to this promo. I thought this was one of the best, if not the best, John Cena promo on Raw all year. You know, Cena is very hit or miss. Anybody who listens to this show knows I am not usually a fan of the pandering. I'm not a fan of the comedy. But there was very little comedy here. And the pandering stuff, yeah, I didn't see it. I didn't see it that way. I didn't see it the way that a lot of you saw it. Whether he knew the kid was going to be in the crowd or not when he pointed to him, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I should recap this first, because I know a lot of you don't even watch Raw anymore. I don't blame you. You've given up. John Cena says Kevin Owens had maybe the most unbelievable debut in WWE history, which is a fair point. I don't know if it's the best, but it would definitely be up there. I would suggest that you have Kane and Taz and Chris Jericho and people like that who have had some of the best debuts in WWE history. We're talking about the main roster here, not NXT. You'd have to put Kevin Owens up there. I mean, it wasn't his debut appearance, but in terms of a match, he'd have to be near the top of the list, I would think. So he's not wrong in saying that. Crowd started a "You Got Beat" chant directed at Cena. Cena agrees. He says, "You're right. I got beat." And he says he was going to walk out here and hand Kevin Owens the United States Championship, but then he decided against it when he realized that Kevin Owens is not a real man. That's the easiest way to get in somebody's head. You say that they're not a man. And it's funny, you know, I saw some people who took umbrage with John Cena saying that. How can John Cena, his character, say that Kevin Owens is not a real man when Kevin Owens actually has a son? And always talks about providing for his family, and John Cena is too afraid to have any kids. He doesn't want a family. How can Cena call Owens half a man like he did here in this promo? Just because you have a kid does not make you a man. People have no business raising kids, and yet they're popping them out left and right. That does not make them a man. I could pop out a kid too. Doesn't make me a man. Those aren't men. The people who don't have any business having children, who are popping them out left and right, they're not men. They're deadbeats. There are plenty of shitty fathers out there. So I think that's a poor argument. I laughed when I saw that, as though one has anything to do with the other. So John Cena said Kevin Owens' son was so influenced by the WWE marketing machine. If he was so influenced by the marketing machine, he'd be wearing an Adam Rose shirt. And he'd be dancing with the Funkasaurus, and he'd want to grow up to play in the XFL. Poor Adam Rose. I still can't believe how they botched that whole thing. I cannot believe how they dropped the ball on him after that ESPN special. ESPN does a one-hour special on your company, and this guy's story, he's one of the featured people in the story, and his story resonates with everyone who saw it. Not one person could come away from that not thinking, he's a nice guy, even if you're not an Adam Rose fan. I don't see how you can watch that and not come away from it at least wanting to see the guy succeed. You really want to see that guy succeed. He's not doing anything anyway. And so what do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. He's fooling around with Rosa Mendez in the back. So now they're just piling on the poor guy. So John Cena did some of his usual shtick that usually grates on my nerves about how some people chant "Let's go Cena," some people chant "Cena sucks." But he lives and dies by those mottos. They're not just t-shirt slogans. And then he dropped the bomb on Hiroshima. He knocked down the Twin Towers when he had the temerity of this man to point out a young fan in the crowd holding up a sign that read, "I'm beating cancer." You may as well have put, you know, neon glow lights on the damn sign. This thing was done up with all sorts of colors. This kid really wanted to get John Cena's attention. And he did. Now again, did Cena know that the fan would be there? Maybe. Maybe he did. Maybe he met him before the show. Maybe it was something that was organized through Make-A-Wish and they gave him a heads up. So what? So what? He pointed a second time at the kid later on in the promo. He told him, "Keep on fighting." He's like, "You hear me? Whatever you do, don't stop fighting. And that's coming from me," he said. And then he told Kevin Owens, man to almost man, that in 2 weeks he'd have to explain to his son how a great wrestler like himself, that being Kevin Owens, got beat by a real man. And the crowd came alive for this. Cena took off his shirt. Owens threw down the NXT belt. It looked like they were going to square off. And then Kevin Owens, great heel that he is, bailed out of the ring. You always leave them wanting more. I thought this segment was fantastic. This feud is the best thing going in WWE today. I think John Cena now is in the perfect role. I don't know how long he'll be there for, because you always have to imagine he'll be back in the main event at some point. But I think this is the perfect role for him. He's not in the main events. He's not fighting for the WWE Championship. He's elevating the prestige of the U.S. title. I actually look forward to his open challenges when he has them on TV. I couldn't say that before. And he's trying to help get Kevin Owens over to a level where, really, he's already one of the top heels in the entire company. I mean, who's better than him right now? Seth Rollins? It's debatable. Who would be number two? If Seth Rollins is the number one heel in the company, who's number two? Kane? Sheamus? Owens is there. He's already there. And the credibility of laying out John Cena week after week and then beating him the way that he did, lots of other top guys, believe me, would not be as generous as John Cena was there. Those things have all helped elevate Owens right out of the gate, so I love this. But people were so furious. They were furious over this idea of WWE using a child with cancer to help get John Cena over. They started a petition on change.org. They started a petition to get WWE to stop exploiting sick kids for entertainment, or else they're going to cancel their network subscriptions and they're going to stop ordering the pay-per-views. Oh no. Let me tell you something, okay? I am not going to sit here and argue that WWE has not and does not exploit things or exploit people for their own benefit, because they do. They're a company. That's what companies do. I'm not condoning it. I'm not endorsing it, but it happens. Absolutely. When they do those the Susan G. Komen stuff for breast cancer awareness, and I can speak on this because my family knows a lot when it comes to breast cancer, I don't have to like their relationship with the Komen Foundation, which I don't. I think there are better charities and organizations out there that they could work with more than Komen, where the money will actually go to what it's supposed to go to, not fundraising and overhead. I don't have to like that, and I understand it's good PR for them to show the women on camera in the front row and have the pink rope for October and all that stuff. At the end of the day, when they show those women on camera, it doesn't bother me. It's a very nice thing. It's a cool thing that they do. And it's John Cena who is usually the one calling them out. Sometimes they'll have Hulk Hogan out there. But a lot of times it's Cena. It was supposedly Cena's idea to even do that stuff. Are they building goodwill in the eyes of the fans for John Cena when he does stuff like that? Of course. Of course they are. That's a byproduct of that. Absolutely. Remember the Stephanie McMahon tweet? You know, the future of marketing is philanthropy. There's always an agenda of some kind. But you know what? This was as genuine a feel-good moment as you're going to get when you watch a show like Monday Night Raw. When John Cena pointed out that kid for the first time on Monday, the kid put his hand up to his mouth like he was in shock. It meant so much to him that John Cena had singled him out on TV and told him to never give up. And when Cena went back to him again, you know, I'm watching this and I'm like, holy crap, like I'm almost tearing up here watching this. It was a really, really nice moment. And then after the show, John Cena invited the kid into the ring, held up his sign, and still, people bashed him. They bashed him for it like he was Satan incarnate. I'm speaking as someone who, as we speak, is dealing with a family member with cancer. I know some of you have lost loved ones to it. Cancer sucks, okay? It fucking sucks. And if it were a person, I would beat it to death with my bare hands and not a jury in the world would convict me for it. I would walk off scot-free. John Cena made that kid's night. He made that kid's life with what he did on Monday night. The kid was not an actor. He gave that kid something to remember for the rest of his life. What is so wrong about that? It was a nice moment. And yeah, I don't want to insult anybody who feels different on this. If you are somebody who's lost someone to cancer and you were bothered by this, you know, who the hell am I to tell you that you're wrong? You're entitled to feel however you want to feel about it. But I really think it's ridiculous. It is completely ridiculous that people will go to such great lengths to be angry over something like this. It really makes me embarrassed to be a fan. It's stuff like this that makes me hate being a wrestling fan. And it had absolutely nothing to do with anything that John Cena did on Raw. In fact, that made me proud to be a fan. That's a segment that I can show to somebody who is not a fan and feel totally comfortable doing so. Unlike most everything else I see on Raw that would completely embarrass me if I showed that to a non-fan. John Cena did not disrespect people with cancer. Cut the bullshit. There are people who are being angry for the sake of being angry. That's what we're seeing on display here. They're being angry just to be angry. And some of these people, the ones I'm talking about here, who just look for any excuse in the world to crap all over John Cena, anything he says, anything he does, they're loving this. They couldn't wait to jump on that phony petition, which is stupid and will go absolutely nowhere, as it should. It will fade into obscurity with every other dumb shit petition that people start. I'd be ashamed to even attach my name to something so stupid. Those people, the really hardcore Cena haters, they need help. They need some serious psychological intervention. I think those people need to step away from wrestling for a while, find another hobby. Find another TV show that won't offend you so much, since these people are so overly sensitive. Maybe wrestling is not for you. So I wanted to get that off my chest, because the hate was just so over the top and so unwarranted, it made me angry and embarrassed. Like I said, I thought it was a great promo by John Cena. I love the intensity. I think he and Owens play off each other very well. And it's the best thing going in WWE right now. Randy Orton, Roman Reigns, Sheamus, Dolph Ziggler, the new sensation Neville, Kofi Kingston, and Kane are all official for this year's Money in the Bank ladder match. They may be adding one more to bring the total number to 8. I'm not sure. Kofi and Dolph, clearly they're in the Money in the Bank match in the role of use the ladder to do fun flippy shit so that one of the guys sitting at the big boy table can actually win the match. Kane being in there makes this the third straight pay-per-view main event, not counting the Elimination Chamber because that technically wasn't a pay-per-view. But it is the third straight pay-per-view main event that Kane is in, where he is being positioned to play a key role in the finish of the match. This seems to be the same story month after month after month. The Authority had Roman Reigns wrestle 3 times on this show Monday night in order to keep his spot in the Money in the Bank ladder match. Yeah, if they wanted him out so badly, why the hell did they put him in there in the first place? Not a bright idea to have him out there 3 times, either. If it was the law of diminishing returns, each time out he got less and less of a reaction. Triple H's grand idea was to first put Roman Reigns in there against King Barrett. I think one has to question the future of a post-Vince McMahon WWE if Triple H's decision, if his decision-making here is any indication of what's to come. He takes a perennial jobber, a guy who got beat again by R-Truth in the chamber just the night before, and puts him in there with Reigns as though he's some sort of serious threat. He is not a serious threat. Wade Barrett is a job guy. People say, oh, so much for that King of the Ring push he was getting. You people don't understand. There never was a King of the Ring push. There never was a push. King of the Ring was a one-night gimmick. This has been the pattern with most of the King of the Ring winners in recent years. So, of course, Roman Reigns beat him. Took him almost 15 minutes to do it, but he did it. And then later, Roman Reigns beat Mark Henry in his second match of the night by countout, because we can't beat Mark Henry clean in the middle. I did appreciate the selling of the eye by Roman Reigns. You know, Steve Austin was talking a lot about the lost art of selling in wrestling when he did his podcast with Paul Heyman, which we'll also talk about in a second. And I thought it was important to kind of bring that point up, in that Roman Reigns was selling the eye. Back in the first match with Barrett, he raked the eye. Barrett, like, raked it or scratched the eye. And so... here in the second match, and really throughout the entire rest of the show, Reigns was constantly rubbing his eye and holding it and touching it and selling it. So I like that. That's a level of detail we don't often see in WWE these days. I mean, that was some Bret Hart level of selling from King of the Ring 1993 right there. When Razor stomped on Bret's fingers in the first round, then he came out with the fingers taped together in the second and third rounds to sell it. Steve Austin would be very proud. Reigns beat Bray Wyatt clean in the main event, so he keeps the spot and Money in the Bank. Ryback was to wrestle Miz for the Intercontinental title on the show, but Big Show made his grand return. He came out to interrupt before the match even started, and he knocked out Miz with a punch to the shoulder. that missed his job by about, oh, I'd say 50 feet maybe. Miz sold it anyway because nobody knows how to improvise anymore. You know, it's funny. I was watching Hulk Hogan against Macho King from the main event on the network, February 1990. That was the one with James Buster Douglas as the special enforcer. It was supposed to be Mike Tyson originally. They had a deal to bring in Tyson for that role, but Tyson lost, shockingly lost to Buster Douglas, so they got Douglas instead, and then they buried Tyson on TV. So at the end of that match, the big spot was Douglas knocking out Randy Savage with a punch. The same exact spot they reused years later at WrestleMania with Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels and Mike Tyson. And so Douglas throws a punch. The whole thing was Hogan was supposed to shove Savage into it. So all three guys are in the ring. Hogan's in the corner. Savage is looking at Hogan in the corner and like, what are you going to do? I'm going to turn my back and I dare you to do something to me. And when he turned his back, so now Savage is facing in the direction of Douglas, Hogan gave Savage a shove and Douglas was to have thrown a punch. The problem is, it missed. The first punch missed, and it was obvious that it missed, and Savage knew that it missed, and instead of going down and selling for a punch that missed and making himself and making his entire profession look bad in the process, Randy Savage thought on his feet, and clearly, first of all, he doesn't go down, and then you could see him telling Buster Douglas, throw another one, and he throws a second punch, and the second one connects, and Savage sells it and goes down. That's a pro right there. Randy Savage was a pro. I know that's a newsflash to a lot of people. You didn't know that. But Randy Savage was a really good professional wrestler. That's a man who knows how it's done. So, this all must mean, I guess, that we're getting Big Show, the Big Show and the Big Guy at Money in the Bank for the Intercontinental title. I remember when they talked about that as a possible WrestleMania match a few years ago, and they ended up doing Ryback and Mark Henry instead. Which did wonders for Ryback, by the way, when Mark Henry fell on him and pinned him. But the big spot in that match, when it was first rumored, I guess that would have been WrestleMania 29, would have been Ryback lifting Big Show up for the shell shock. It would have been this huge WrestleMania moment. Maybe they can still do it now. I don't know if it'll be as impressive. I feel like we've seen Ryback pick up big guys before in the move. You know, maybe now it wouldn't have the same kind of punch that it would have had a few years ago. But you know what? I'm okay with this, and I'll tell you why I'm okay with this. I am okay with this, if that's the match, at Money in the Bank, because it's not Big Show and Roman Reigns. So I am not complaining. Brie Bella pinned Paige, giving Nikki Bella the win, using twin magic. Looks like the Bellas may be going heel again. I don't ever remember them turning face in the first place, but Nikki was acting very heelish here, even before the finish. She was doing push-ups on the outside of the ring and stuff like that. They desperately need to bring some women up from NXT. I hate to break up the whole NXT thing, but you gotta bring some women up. You just have to. Charlotte is doing nothing. Charlotte needs to be brought up here pronto, because this division is just dead right now. It is dead. Dead. And that was really it. As far as the key stuff from Raw, you know, Ambrose and Reigns, they left together again at the end of the show through the crowd. Ambrose still has the WWE title that he stole. They're going to have a ladder match for the championship at Money in the Bank. That should be a lot of fun. When the show is over, we have the Stone Cold podcast on the WWE Network with Paul Heyman as his guest. The thing I love about this is the first Austin podcast in many months. Austin gives zero fucks when he does these shows. That's why I love him. That's why I love him so much. He does not care. It is just an hour of him basically ripping and burying WWE and the way they do things now. It's like I said to somebody on Twitter, it's like a televised version of The Sound Off, but with a southern accent. Why don't you hire me for the network? I'd love to get paid to tell you about all the things you're doing wrong. You know, from a fan's perspective. We could even take live calls. Imagine me on the network having to debate callers about the terrible, awful things that John Cena did on Monday night. Tell me that would not be must-see television. So they talked about, this blew me away. I thought this was hilarious. We had Paul Heyman for a few minutes there. I don't even know how they got on the subject. We had Paul Heyman talking about Jewish history on the WWE Network. I think Austin maybe asked him a question about why do the Jews control all the money? Which, by the way, if that's true, nobody told me. because I sure as hell don't control the money. So somebody needs to clue me in on that. So that was very interesting to see Paul Heyman talking about that. I think that needs to be a weekly show on the network. Jewish history with Paul Heyman. I would tune in. I would watch every single episode. I mean, they already have my money anyway, but they could have my money for the network for the rest of eternity. I would love to see that show. Austin asked Heyman about CM Punk. So that was not, you know, off the table. And how he thinks he will do in UFC, which was very interesting. So they talked about that for a little bit. Stone Cold also brought up Jake Roberts and how nobody properly sells the DDT these days, which is funny because I saw one of the best DDT sells in a long time on that show Monday night. I think Dolph Ziggler gave Kofi Kingston a DDT, and Kofi bounced up, but he fell ass first on top of Dolph's face. Sounds like a porno. But he's right. I mean, he's absolutely right. The DDT is one of those moves, just a regular DDT, the way that Jake Roberts used to do it. And that was it. You were done. That was a finish. And now there's so many different variations of DDTs. The DDTs now look so much better than they did back then. People sell them. They bounce. You know, it's great. And it doesn't mean anything. It's just, up, oh, two count, kick out. Nobody buys it. Nobody believes that you're going to end a match with a DDT. I mean, it's been that way for a while now. This is not, you can't blame the current generation for it. It's slowly, this is what has happened to wrestling over the years. But he's absolutely right. He is not wrong in that at all. Paul Heyman at one point denied having ever done cocaine in his life. Again, I do not remember how they got on that subject. And this is from a guy, Paul Heyman, who worked for years at Studio 54. And if you know anything about Studio 54, you know, between that and his history being in that ECW locker room, I mean, I have no reason to doubt him. Although, you know, look, Heyman's not always the most honest person, I suppose, in the world. But if he is telling the truth, that's some willpower right there. If he's telling the truth. Austin buried the promo system in WWE, which Jim Ross just did also. I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing yet. I just saw it before I started recording here. But I was reading Jim Ross's latest blog, and he snapped. He just went off on the wrestling business. He didn't single anybody out in particular, but it was just this long rant. I don't know what set him off. But one of the things in his blog, before I stopped reading it, he was ranting about promos and how everything is so scripted and it's fake and they suck and nobody has any passion behind their promos. Nobody buys what they're saying because it's not their own words. And again, he's not wrong. And Austin was not wrong. I think the current promo system does suck in WWE. It sucks. Austin also buried John Cena's springboard stunner, said it's not worth a damn. That was his exact word. It is not worth a damn. And it's not because he has a problem with John Cena. He loves John Cena. But it should be a move that you at least win some matches with. It could be an alternate finish for him. Instead, he hasn't won a single match with it. It's a setup move. You kick out of it. So it's not worth a damn. He took a move that was a finish. He does it off the ropes now, so he actually added a little bit of a flair to it, even though it looks sloppy as all hell and he should stop doing it. And he doesn't win matches with it. People kick out. Kevin Owens, I think, kicked out at Elimination Chamber. So I thought that was funny. And then came the real newsworthy part of the interview, which was the end. Before they finished up, Paul Heyman's like, listen, can I turn the tables here and ask you a few questions? And Austin's like, shit, son, you could have been asking me questions the whole time. Go for it. And he asked him, that's when he asked him about the springboard stunner, but then he asked him about having a match at WrestleMania next year with Brock Lesnar. And this was so awesome. And if you didn't see this interview, you need to watch it. Because, you know, earlier in the interview, they're talking about how the art of selling, it's a lost art. And promos that actually are money promos. What does it mean to be money? And then, as if it were by design, at the end of the interview here, what did we see? We saw Stone Cold Steve Austin flip the switch, almost on a dime, and cut a money promo. And in just a few words, in 60 seconds or 90 seconds, whatever it was at the very end of an hour-long interview, this guy did more in those 90 seconds to sell you on WrestleMania 32 next year than anything else. Austin says the only way that match would happen is if they made it a Texas death match. And I think the old Texas death match stipulation, it's basically like a last man standing match, only I think you have to pin your opponent, and after you pin him, then the ref counts to 10. And if he If the opponent makes it up before 10, the match resumes. So I'm sure if WWE did a Texas death match, they probably wouldn't even call it death match. Ooh, PG! You know, they would call it, I don't know what they would call it. They'd come up with some goofy-ass name for it. But that's what he said. He said, if it were a Texas death match, I would consider it. And he got real serious, and to the point where a lot of you guys were even writing, I saw on the Facebook wall, hey, do you think some of that was legit? It looked like Austin was legit pissed. And I just sat there, I was pissing myself laughing, like, this fucking guy is awesome. He had everybody believing that he was legitimately pissed off, and it was just his facial expression, his tone, the tone of his voice, and he had you believe. He had you believe, so he proved. And it's not like any of it was scripted. I mean, I'm sure it was planned, but it wasn't like Austin had to read a script before he went out there. He knew exactly what to do. He knew exactly what to say. It got me excited. I wasn't sold on Austin ever wrestling again. I still don't think it's a good idea. In fact, I think it's an awful idea of all people to put him in the ring with. He hasn't wrestled a match in 13 years. He's a guy with a bad neck. And you're going to put him in the ring with Brock Lesnar, the guy who's known for German suplexing people over and over and over again? I don't think that's a good idea. But it would still be a cool match. I mean, you got two big names in there who never had a match before. They're back in Texas. If they do it like in a street fight kind of way, where they don't have to worry about suplexes and wrestling moves, I guess, you know, it could work. You can make it work. And that would be a huge draw. I mean, you headline a WrestleMania with Austin back in Texas, one last match, one last stand like the Alamo one-on-one with Brock Lesnar. And you have, I know Rock and Triple H is rumored, Undertaker and Sting is rumored. John Cena and Hulk Hogan is the latest rumor. That's a match I don't need to see. But all these big matches, but Austin and Lesnar, I mean, that one would be huge. But they've got to do that. I mean, they've got to come up with matches. I know people are going to be upset. Oh, they're taking spots away from the younger guys. If they do Austin and Brock, and that's the only big match they do, they're not taking spots away from anybody. But I would agree. If they do Austin, Brock, if they do Rock and Hunter, if they do Undertaker and Sting, if they have three or four matches like that, then yeah. I can understand why maybe the guys on the roster now would be a little upset about that. But they want to pack that stadium with 100,000 people. That's Vince McMahon's edict. We need to sell out WrestleMania next year. And so, all hands on deck. All the chips are on the table. This is not one of those years where it's like, well, we have so many big matches here. Why don't we save one? We have so many shows. It's kind of foolish to put them all on one show. So why don't we save, let's say, I don't know, Rock and Triple H for Extreme Rules? Like, that's not the time to be doing it. I mean, they want to load up that WrestleMania show next year, and that would definitely be a big match. Do I think Austin is seriously considering it? Yeah, I think he would consider it. I think for the right amount of money, if the match was going to be with Brock, and Austin had the chance to work with Brock and work with Paul, because they think so highly of each other, and they put the power of the creative kind of back in their hands, like Jericho and Shawn Michaels. I mean, they've talked, Jericho in his book talked about the fact that that whole feud in 2008, I mean, they worked with the writers, but it was almost all Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho. You know, maybe there was some input from like Michael Hayes and people like that. But if Austin said, listen, you want me so badly, this is what I ask for. You either give me what I want, you let me work this the way that I want to work this, or I'm not going to wrestle. I'll be there, but I'm not going to wrestle. And if they want Austin on that show in a match so badly, believe me, I'm sure they'll give him what he wants. So that it took a very interesting turn at the end. It's worth it to go out of your way to watch the entire thing. It was a very entertaining interview, but the last 5 minutes or so is just great television. It's great television, and it takes you back to a time when wrestling, not that wrestling isn't fun, I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm crapping all over wrestling now, but it's missing something. It's missing that element. And we saw it when Austin, he just flipped the switch. It's like he had a split personality there. And he went from being the jokey podcast host to being a guy who said, I'm going to beat the fucking piss out of you. You know, and he had a great line too. Heyman said something. Heyman was getting nervous. He was sweating bullets the whole interview. I mean, those lights, believe me, I know, those lights are hot. And Heyman, at one point, he goes, well, I'm just an advocate. And Austin just looks at him, just completely deadpans him and goes, well, I'm about to advocate an ass-whooping. It reminded me of when they had Austin and CM Punk that one time on that Raw All-Star show back in, I guess, 2011 it would have been. I think Punk was like the leader of the new Nexus or something. They had that great interaction in the back where CM Punk is kind of making fun of him. Are you drunk? Are you drunk? Can you read the alphabet backwards? And Austin just goes, no, but I can whip your ass backwards. Like, this guy is fucking awesome. He hasn't lost it. He has not lost a step when it comes to his mouth.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Get into the Wednesday Night War here. Start with NXT and some Samoa Joe news. Samoa Joe either has signed or is about to sign. There's some discrepancies in the stories there. A full-time deal with NXT. As you might imagine, ROH signing with Destination America had a lot to do with this. Joe's t-shirt sales have also reportedly been through the roof. He will be allowed to work the ROH TV tapings that he's already committed to on June 20th. I'm not sure if that match is going to air on TV or if it'll be a dark match. I think WWE would want very much for that not to air on TV. But that's going to be his last ROH date, and he will be allowed to finish up any other existing independent commitments that he has through the month of August. But Joe is now a full-time NXT guy. He is not coming to the main roster, at least not yet. I think it'll happen eventually. And by the way, I think when and if it happens, there is still a very real possibility that he will have to change his name. Just because he's using Samoa Joe now does not mean he will continue to be Samoa Joe if he hits the main roster. And I think that would be incredibly dumb at this point to change the name. But they will definitely consider doing it. I don't doubt that at all. Eventually, I think he'll make his way up there. But his being signed to a full-time deal does not mean he will be on Raw or SmackDown. It just means he can no longer work outside dates. And WWE has total control over him now as opposed to partial control. Now, one blemish on this, and it'll be interesting to see how, if at all, this affects Joe. He wrestled a dark match against Tyson Kidd. I don't know if there was a second one at the tapings on Tuesday in Houston, and it happened there, or if this happened in San Antonio on Monday. But Tyson Kidd took a muscle buster from Joe the wrong way, from what I can gather. I think he took it directly on the base of his neck, and suffered a pretty serious spinal cord injury, according to both the Wrestling Observer and PWInsider.com. WWE has said nothing about this because they keep a lot of their injury stuff quiet now. For example, we still don't know what the hell is wrong with Daniel Bryan because WWE refuses to tell us. So I'm not sure if Kidd's going to need surgery. I think from what I've read, he's trying to avoid that. It could heal without surgery, but he is going to be out for quite a while. That really sucks. That really sucks for Tyson Kidd. You know, he was out for like a year, maybe over a year, when he had reconstructive knee surgery. They were never using him to his full potential. I thought he was great as a heel. The stuff they were doing with him and Natalya in NXT was great. And then the team came along with him and Cesaro, and they just had this chemistry, and they became a great, fun, entertaining tag team to watch. And they had a lot of momentum. And, you know, for Cesaro as well, I feel sorry because he's left without a partner. They took him off the road last week because they didn't know what to do with him until they figure out, I guess, what's going to be with Tyson Kidd. They just said, all right, they're going to pull Cesaro, which is what they did. You might say if Kidd's going to be out for a while, it might be a great opportunity for WWE to push Cesaro as a babyface now on his own the way they should have last year. I will not hold my breath on that. I do not expect that to happen. or at least if they do, they'll just, you know, keep him slotted where he is. If the injury happened on the muscle buster, you know, that can't be good for Joe, I would think. Or the muscle buster. I mean, accidents happen. It really should not have any impact on Joe, but this is WWE. This is not how things like that usually work. If you have any doubt about that, read JTG's book if you want to learn all about heat. You know, you look at somebody cross-eyed in the locker room and you got heat. I mean, Joe came in, this big shot from the Indies, dropped the guy in his head, and now he's got a spinal cord injury. I would think that Joe probably will have some heat with some people. It's just not good for anybody involved, so it sucks. I hope that it's not as serious as has been reported and that Tyson Kidd can come back maybe in a few months. On NXT, we had a William Regal press conference, and I put that in quotes. I'm using air quotes here. What a douche. He had a press conference, although we never saw any press, or I don't think we saw any flashing camera bulbs or anything, but it was supposed to be a press conference. Inserted into the show, announcing that live, on the WWE Network on July 4th. From Tokyo, Japan, Finn Balor will challenge Kevin Owens for the NXT Championship. 6:30 a.m. Eastern Time, 3:30 a.m. Pacific. So set your alarm clocks, people. I think that's awesome. That's exactly what I was hoping they would do, although I didn't know they would be doing Balor versus Owens. It was supposed to be Balor against Chris Jericho and Brock Lesnar against Kofi Kingston on that house show. I think doing the title match overseas is a great idea, especially with Finn's history there. He should get a hero's welcome when he shows up, especially if they get Hideo Itami to maybe be in his corner. Maybe Hideo can introduce him or something. I know Itami's going to be there, so why not have him do something on camera? He's storyline friends with Finn Balor, so it makes sense. Plus, if Balor wins the title and Itami is there to celebrate with him afterwards, it sets up a story for Itami to challenge his friend for the championship when he eventually comes back. I can't help, though, but think that that spot was reserved for Itami, you know, and I'm almost positive it was. I don't know that for sure, but just looking at the circumstances, that had to be his spot. It had to be. I mean, he would have been my pick to win that number one contender's triple threat match at TakeOver, so he would have been the number one contender. You know, if he does win that match, it's probably him winning the title from Kevin Owens in Japan. Probably with the GTS, which we still have not seen on TV. And I always said, I figure they're saving the GTS. They're not teasing it over and over and over again if they're not going to eventually deliver on it. So they've teased it for this long. I mean, they did it at the San Jose State show that I was at, but that was not on TV. And the place went nuts when he did it. But it would make sense after all this time, what are they saving it for? Well, they're probably saving it for when he wins the championship. So think about that. It probably would have been Hideo Itami in Japan on the network beating Kevin Owens for the NXT Championship with the GTS. How huge would that have been? Man, that sucks. That really does suck for him. But the full lineup from Sumo Hall in Tokyo for the show is Lucha Dragons against Los Matadores, Nikki Bella versus Paige versus Naomi for the Divas title, New Day versus Tyson Kidd and Cesaro for the tag team titles. Obviously, that match is going to have to be changed. Chris Jericho will now face Neville. Kevin Owens against Finn Balor for the NXT Championship. Brock Lesnar against Kofi Kingston. Is it wrong that I might actually be looking forward more to Brock and Kofi than the NXT title match? And the main event, John Cena and Dolph Ziggler against Kane and King Barrett, which is a terrible main event. No confirmation yet that they are airing the entire show on the network. People are just kind of assuming that that's the case, but I have not heard WWE say outright that we are airing more than just the NXT title match. I mean, it's being all marketed around Kevin Owens against Finn Balor. You know, and also, here's the other thing. They're listing a 6:30 a.m. Eastern time as the start time, which I think is 7:30 p.m. in Japan. I think they're 13 hours ahead of us. The show lists a bell time in Japan of 7 p.m. So what they may do is they may cut in to air the NXT title match and then cut away when it's over. And just kind of end. If the assumption is that Finn Balor is going to win, Kevin Owens is now on the main roster, they have to get the title off of him, maybe Joe is there and Joe interferes, whatever happens. If the assumption is that Balor wins, you know, that would be a great way to go off the air. You kind of cut in, you show the NXT title match, he wins the championship, he has a big celebration, and then you cut away. You know, that could be what they're doing. Although, before I started recording, somebody sent me a link to a post about the NXT title match on WWE's own Facebook page. And it said, Kevin Owens will defend against Finn Balor as part of a live special on the network featuring Brock Lesnar, John Cena, and others. That makes it sound like they will be airing the full show, but that's one Facebook post on their Facebook page. That's not confirmation of anything. I really hope they do. I really hope they air the entire show. I mean, I don't give a shit about Los Matadores, but hopefully they'll air most of the show on the network and not just the NXT title match. I think that's awesome. Tyler Breeze, who now wears a cape to the ring. What is with WWE and capes all of a sudden? He beat Adam Rose in a battle of the heels, stemming from their tag match a few weeks ago when Breeze turned on him after the match, gave him a super kick. Crowd was quiet for a good part of it because they didn't know who to cheer for, but they were way into Tyler Breeze. And between the crowd reaction to him, the way that he wrestled the match, he almost wrestled the match like a babyface. It makes me wonder if this is the start of a babyface turn. I really don't know about that. I mean, sometimes you just kind of try something different, or if people are into the guy, you kind of go with it. I don't know. I love Tyler Breeze. I want them to do something with him. I know, you know, what do you do? If you've got Joe and you've got Balor, and those are the guys right now for the next few months who are challenging for the championship, so what do you do with Tyler Breeze? I will say, you know, I've always been opposed to this idea. And I still don't like it that much. But there is an argument to be made that maybe this would be a good time to introduce a mid-card title in NXT. Just one title. So you have the World Championship there. You have one mid-card title. You have the women's title. And you have the tag team titles. And Tyler Breeze could, I mean, that could be his. He could own that shit, you know. Whatever you want to call it, you're not going to call it Intercontinental, but it would be something like that. And that probably would be the best option for him right now if they're not going to do anything with him with the NXT title. I think that might be better than turning him babyface, you know. And as the brand expands, you know, Triple H wants this to be a brand all onto its own. It's not just developmental. Maybe introducing a mid-card title wouldn't be a bad idea. Dana Brooke is going to be away for a few months, we were told. She is competing in various Arnold fitness competitions, but she will be back. Good. Take your time. Greg Hamilton interviewed Eva Marie. We saw Eva Marie sitting in the crowd at TakeOver, and she did not get a warm reaction. Well, the reaction she got at TakeOver was like a hero's welcome compared to the reaction she got here. And this was an edited show, so I can only imagine how much worse and how many awful chants they had to edit out before this was even airable on the network. She walked out on stage, and the people would not let her speak. They were booing her. They were catcalling her. They started chanting, "You can't wrestle," at her. All of these awful things, to the point where I felt bad for her. And I'm really no Eva Marie fan. So to get me to really feel sorry for the girl and stick up for her, you have to be doing some really awful stuff to her. And these people just did not give her a chance. And really, you know, on the one hand, why should they? They haven't been given a reason to care about her. I guess it's better to get a reaction like that and get massive heat. Like Vicky Guerrero used to get massive heat, even though, you know, Vicky Guerrero turned out to be a very good performer. At first, I don't know that people would have said that about her. And people would probably say the same thing about Eva Marie. She's not very good at what they have her doing. But to get that kind of heat is much better than not getting any reaction at all. You know, the people could just be sitting on their hands. They could be groaning. She can get, you know, X-Pac heat or Boss Man heat or, you know, Miz heat or whatever you want to call it. I shouldn't say that. Miz actually does get good heat from the crowd. So she talked about how she is going to prove a lot of people wrong. NXT is the place to be. They have the best women's wrestling in the world. This is where I want to be. So they're obviously adding her to the women's roster on NXT. Eva Marie is coming to NXT. I'm sure many of you have seen the videos on Instagram of her training with the Brian Kendrick. WWE has had Kendrick go one-on-one training Eva Marie for many, many weeks now. Brian Kendrick, of course, is a great wrestler. Just because you are a great wrestler does not mean you are going to turn out to be great just because you train under that person. But she's been getting one-on-one instruction. And from what I understand, I mean, she's really been working hard, and she may end up surprising a lot of people. And we'll see. We'll see. I will, I'll talk more about Eva Marie later, but we'll give her a shot, and we'll see how she does. I just felt really bad for her here. I don't think, I don't know. The fans on NXT, it's hit or miss these days. They're getting a little too cute. Not all the time. You know, some weeks they're awesome. You know, the crowd at Full Sail can be great, but then there are times when they could just be completely full of themselves. Alexa Bliss beat Carmella with a roll-up while holding the ropes. It really wasn't long enough to be really good or really bad. It was just a match. Alexa is beautiful. I don't know if I've mentioned that. Have I mentioned that before? I don't think I have. They showed Sami Zayn going under the knife for shoulder surgery down in Birmingham. with some doctor other than Dr. Andrews. Holy shit, I had no idea they had other doctors in Birmingham. I just assumed he treated the entire state of Alabama. And Sammy admitted the injury first happened when he was violently waving his arms on the steps before his big match with John Cena. And then the shoulder popped out on a back suplex. Might be wise for Sammy to just sort of nod at the fans from now on. He is not expected back until October. The Vaudevillains are back. They beat Jason Jordan and Marcus Louis. Yes, that was Jordan's great tag team partner he was talking about last week when he rejected Chad Gable. Marcus Louis, this fucking guy, he's basically Baby Kane. Facially, even the way he dresses now, he wears a pair of black slacks. He's like corporate Kane. He also wins about as many matches as Kane does these days. He lost the match for his team. Jordan was not happy about it. I figure Jordan's going to run through a few more losers until he has no choice but to pick Chad Gable as his partner, and that will be the team going forward. And in the main event, Finn Balor pinned Rhino. Missed the coup de grace, but Rhino missed a gore after that. Balor rolled him up for the pin. Good match. My favorite part was Rhino mocking that little pose that Finn Balor does during his entrance where he throws his arms up in the air. I thought that was hilarious. Afterwards, Balor was on stage. The show was about to go off the air when all of a sudden, Rhino, who you didn't see, he's off camera, he just launches out of camera view, into camera view, out of nowhere, the sickest gore you'll ever see. Just gored the shit out of Finn Balor on the stage, so that had to suck when he landed. Yeah, I mean, he just cut the guy in half. And that's how they went off the air, with Finn Balor nursing his ribs, hurt, on the floor. One other big piece of NXT news here, and it has not yet been confirmed, but from what I understand, Sasha Banks tweeted this out and then quickly took it down, so maybe she jumped the gun. But there was an advertisement, a graphic that she posted, and people, of course, saved it. They screenshotted it. I'm looking at it right now. Promoting NXT at the Manhattan Center in New York City, Saturday, August 22nd, 7:30 p.m. I believe that's SummerSlam weekend. And in fact, I think that might be the same night as the Ring of Honor show at the baseball stadium. Ring of Honor is back at MCU Park where the Brooklyn Cyclones play. They had a show there last year. It's a good thing I wasn't planning on going to Ring of Honor this year. So if this show is real, if this really is happening at the Manhattan Center, obviously I'm going to try to be there. I think my brother wants to go. So we'll try to get some tickets. My fear is that we're just not going to be able to. I'm sure this shit's going to sell out right away. So I'm just waiting to find out the official announcement and when the ticket on sale is. Tickets are not yet on sale. But it says right here, for the first time, NXT comes to New York City August 22nd. The biggest party of the SummerSlam weekend. WWE presents NXT live at the Manhattan Center. Tickets start at $15. So obviously I'm very happy about that. I think it was, I don't know if it was last year. Was it last year when I first said that or at the beginning of this year? When I implored WWE to bring NXT to the Manhattan Center. And so now it looks like they're doing that. And hopefully I'll be able to be there for it. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. You can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. Moving on here with the Wednesday night shows. Debut episode of Ring of Honor on Destination America brought in 163,000 viewers. And that's with zero promotion on television. It was all on social media. Every commercial break on Destination America this past week advertised Impact moving to Wednesdays, but made absolutely no mention of ROH. And I mean, according to Dave Meltzer, not counting Destination America or NESN, which airs Boston Red Sox games, ROH just started to air on that network as well. Not counting those, ROH is already most likely in the 500,000 per week viewer range just with their Sinclair stations alone. You add in those other networks like Destination America and NESN, and you can see why they would be considered the number two promotion in the country in terms of product exposure. Meanwhile, TNA had 297,000 viewers this week, which may be their lowest airing yet. If not, it's one of the lowest since the move to Destination America. That was down big time from the week before, which was the final Friday airing. They did switch nights. Not only that, the Ring of Honor replay, which airs immediately after Impact at 11 p.m., beat the Impact replay at midnight, 110,000 viewers to 72,000. TNA needs to just hope it was changing nights that caused the drop and that they rebound next week. And I think they will. I don't know by how much, but I don't think the number will be quite as low this Wednesday for TNA. Because if not, if it is low, they're in trouble. I mean, they're already in trouble, but it doesn't look good when the other company moves in and does over 70% of your audience on night one. That is an impressive number for Ring of Honor, all things considered. And, you know, Dixie Carter, she'll crow about plus sevens and DVR viewership. Destination America doesn't care about DVR. Advertisers don't care. And I see some TNA fans claiming the number was actually 369,000. Oh, the websites are just bashing TNA. It wasn't 297, it was actually 369, because you see, you add the two numbers together from the first airing and from the replay. That's not how this works. Stop doing that. I want to kick these people in the ass, but that would just give them a headache. I thought TNA was the better show production-wise. I mean, it's not like they blew away Ring of Honor. I saw some people saying, oh, Ring of Honor looked completely minor league and TNA blew them away. TNA did not blow them away. Their production was a little bit better than Ring of Honor. ROH has some work to do. I've read they're investing in better lighting, which is good. They need to do that. But ROH, I thought, came across just fine. Of the two shows, if I'm being completely honest, I thought TNA was stronger, even with the attempted murder that we saw. And just to give some TNA thoughts here, since I did watch the show this week, it's time to put the title on EC3. I think they will at Slammiversary. I think they will put the championship on him. He's one of the few successes they've actually had on that show. I thought the whole barbershop quartet or quintet deal at the start of the show, you know, I guess it was a cute idea, I guess. I didn't care for it, but maybe somebody out there did, you know, if they were born in 1930. The Pope, D'Angelo De Niro, was back. He was on commentary. They have these rotating announcers with Josh Matthews every week. They can't seem to figure out who the hell they want to put with Josh ever since Taz left. They had Mike Tenay fill in 1 week. Mike Tenay's not doing fuck all for them. They've got him under contract. You know, all he was doing was writing the text bubbles on the Impact replay that used to air on Saturdays, and then Destination America shit-canned the show. They've got him under contract for like another year. I mean, I was not a huge Mike Tenay fan, but for God's sakes, like, you need some stability. That's the thing with Impact. It has no stability. Everybody has heard the story. Everybody who's on the internet and listens to podcasts and reads newsletters, everybody knows the story with TNA and Destination America. They know that unless something changes, TNA is gone from the network as of September. No stability. They watch the show. The announcers, they change every single week. No stability. Destination America moves the show from Friday night to Wednesday night, which is not the first time that Impact has changed nights. No stability. That's one of the biggest problems they have right now, is that there is no stability. Find a person and stick with them. Maybe they'll stick with the Pope. This was his first time on commentary. I thought he was okay. I was not overly impressed. And Josh Matthews, he just annoys the shit out of me whenever I listen to him now. Whenever I hear the sound of his voice, he just annoys me. I can't stand him. Rockstar Spud cashing in his X Division title for a shot at Kurt Angle's TNA title next week. The segment they did there I thought was well done. I think Spud is great. Spud and EC3, two of the bright spots on that show. And then we had the James Storm, Mickey James angle. Where to begin? So this has been the most compelling storyline on the show for weeks now, the Magnus, Mickey James, James Storm stuff. Ever since they kind of got James Storm away from the Revolution, I'm not really a big fan of that gimmick. He's almost like the Bray Wyatt cult-like character, or even Punk maybe back when he was doing the Straight Edge Society. And he has, you know, all of his little minions there, and Koya, and I don't care about them. So he's kind of gotten away from that a little bit more in recent weeks. And it's obvious that, you know, he's disingenuous and Magnus knows it and Mickey James doesn't. So it's kind of compelling stuff. And Storm tells Mickey he got her some important music meetings in Nashville because Mickey James is a singer, as I'm sure you're all aware. And she takes the bait, and so she travels to Nashville only to find that there are no meetings. Instead, James Storm tries to convince her to dump that loser Magnus, take her son Oliver. Is it Oliver? It's Oliver, right? Is it Oliver? I don't know. I thought it was Oliver. Donovan. Is it Donovan? I can't remember now. We'll merge the two and call him Dolliver. So Storm tells her to take Dolliver and come join the Revolution. And this freaked out Mickey. Storm apologized for it. All seemed to be forgiven. They then showed security camera footage of Storm and Mickey on a train platform. He was escorting her to the train on her way out of Nashville. Now, of course, we could ask ourselves, why are they taking the train? I mean, these are TNA stars. Shouldn't they have a limo waiting for them or some form of transportation on wheels? Apparently not. So they're on the train platform, and he then shoulder checks Mickey James off the platform, and you hear a loud thud. There's a few second delay, and then there's a loud thud when she presumably falls on the tracks to her death, I guess. Only she's not dead. Thank God she's not dead. The TNA website says she suffered symptoms of a concussion, even though she passed all of her concussion tests, and she was left emotionally disturbed. So now Mickey James has something in common with the people on those TNA fan sites. She meets the membership criteria now. I think whoever booked that angle is showing symptoms of a concussion and should probably get checked out by TNA's medical staff. And by the way, TNA's medical staff, probably headed by frickin' Dr. Baron von Raschke. I'd seek a second opinion if I were her. Do you know that somebody actually called the police to James Storm's house on Thursday after that angle aired on TV? True story. He said he thanked the police officer for having a sense of humor and not arresting him. Had to be somebody from TNA Mecca that made that call. Had to be. So here's the deal with this angle. It was stupid. Especially if they're not writing her off TV for very long, which it looks like they aren't, if she's perfectly fine, and she was tweeting the next day, which was another weird thing. She was tweeting out tour dates, like nothing ever happened, which is very weird. I mean, I know it's a television show, but still. I don't know that I would have had her on there being so active on social media after this stupid angle aired on TV. I said this last week after Bayle got murdered on Lucha Underground by Dario Cueto's brother. They can get away with stuff like that because of the kind of show that Lucha Underground is. WWE and TNA don't really have that same luxury. And so when they do stuff like this, it doesn't come off as cool or entertaining. It just comes off as lame and stupid, which is what this was. We had the Wolves and the Dirty Heels in match 3 of their Best of 5 series. I missed the first two matches. I heard the second one was great. This one was great, too. Aries and Rude were down 3-0 in the series. They were on the verge of being swept. And the story was that Austin Aries was trying to convince Bobby Rude that they had to do what they do best, which is whatever it takes to win. Aries threw a chair into the ring for Rude to use at the finish. Rude didn't want to use it, probably because, unlike Austin Aries, he realized that if he did use it, they'd be disqualified. Boy, Aries has shown some poor judgment of late. Ref got distracted, though, and Bobby Roode did end up using the chair, got the pin, and so Aries and Roode are officially heels once again, which is good because, you know, the word heels is in their name. They probably should be heels. They are at their best as heels, so I'm very happy to see that. This was a great match. This was the best thing on the entire show. Thumbs up. And at the end of the show, after EC3 and Tyrus against Kurt Angle and Spud in the main event, Austin Aries came back out with his Money in the Bank briefcase and said he was cashing in next week on Impact. So we're getting two championship matches. It's going to be Kurt Angle against Rockstar Spud. And the winner will then have to defend the championship against Austin Aries in the main event. I assume they're having him cash in now because Aries' contract is supposedly up in the next few weeks and he could be on his way out of TNA unless something changes, which probably just gave away the finish of next week's show, but oh well. It's Impact. So now what many of you have all been waiting for, the debut of Ring of Honor on the Sound Off. Ring of Honor on Destination America, and on the Sound Off. This is the first review I've ever done of Ring of Honor's TV show. I've been to plenty of ROH shows live, and I've talked about them and reviewed them here, but never the TV show, so this is kind of cool. It was a very straightforward, wrestling-heavy show that promoted the hell out of their Best in the World show coming up in New York City, June 19th. One advantage that ROH has over TNA, and WWE for that matter, is the announcing. That's what jumped out at me on this show. I've heard Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino on some of the iPay-per-views before. Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino are a far superior team than any that either of the two companies are offering right now. And that includes NXT, which is part of WWE. I'm counting the NXT announcing in there as well. These guys are much better. I'd still say that Stryker and Vamp are my favorites on Lucha Underground, but Ring of Honor is right behind them. This was taped in Toronto and featured some talent from New Japan. This was the tail end of all the mixed shows that ROH did with New Japan last month. The Briscoes, Jay and Mark, opened the show with a promo. That's always a good way to get people's attention. The one thing you cannot say about the Briscoes is that when you look at them, they don't get your attention. They absolutely do. Will Ferrara was out first for a match against Kushida. If Ferrara looked familiar, that's because he was the cameraman who Dean Ambrose assaulted on Raw a couple of weeks ago. Rolling armbar for the submission and a win by Kushida, who was crazy over with the crowd. They were big time into him. I'm a Kushida fan, too. I'm not sure what's going on with Alex Shelley, Kushida's tag partner in New Japan, as part of the Time Splitters. I know Shelley was hurt recently. He suffered a pretty serious injury. But he went on Twitter and posted some cryptic messages that made it sound like he might be retiring. So I don't know what the future holds for Kushida, but he's a great wrestler. He's got a good look. He's kind of small, but maybe he'll get a big push there as a single in New Japan. Anyway, both men shook hands when the match was over, adhering to the code of honor. The Addiction, Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, who are the reigning ROH Tag Team Champions, they came out to harass Kevin Kelly and tell everybody that next week, Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, Red Dragon, will get their one and only shot to get the tag team title belts back. I think that'll be a fun match. And then they gave Kevin Kelly permission to worship them now. Poor guy. I still remember when The Rock made him stick his finger up his nose and stand there. Good times. The Last Real Man, Silas Young against New Japan's Takaki Watanabe. Watanabe's been wrestling, or at least he was, I don't know if he still is, for Johnny Rods' promotion here in Brooklyn, World of Unpredictable Wrestling. I think New Japan had sent him there for about a year. Sent him to the States, not just Johnny's promotion. So here he was against Silas Young. Silas Young, who's 34 years old, but with that mustache, looks every bit of 44. Pro wrestling's modern-day version of Tom Selleck. The two of them had been partners on a show a while back, and Silas turned on Watanabe, hence this match. Airplane spin into a TKO by Silas for the pin. Not much else to say. It was okay. It was an okay match. Nothing really special. Watanabe definitely does not have the physique that most guys in New Japan have, which I guess is good. I guess it's good to be different. We then had Moose with the lovely Veda Scott in his corner. If you want a nice shot of Veda, go find the photos I posted in December when I went to Final Battle. I got a good one in there. I think she even retweeted it on her page. Moose is Quinn Ojinaka, giant man who played in the NFL before taking a stab at pro wrestling. He's only been training a few years, made his debut last year, but he's already shown some real progress and has the fans chanting for him when he comes out. He is undefeated in his time so far in ROH. With his size, I can't imagine WWE not wanting to snatch him up at some point. In fact, I think they wanted him as a ringer on the new season of Tough Enough, but he stayed with ROH. It was supposed to be Moose against BJ Whitmer, the leader of the Decade faction, with Adam Page and Colby Carino. Colby Carino is the real-life son of Steve Carino, who is ringside on commentary for this match. Colby's only 19 years old, doesn't look a day over 15. I know the feeling. Trust me, I can relate. It looked like Whitmer was going to have Paige wrestle in his place. Adam Page, not Page from WWE. But instead, he picked Colby for the spot. Colby, who is maybe 150 pounds soaking wet and could not fight his way out of a wet paper bag, going up against the 300-pound Moose. And what followed was a destruction, the likes of which we have not seen since the Monday Night Skirmish of 5 years ago, when TNA tried to compete against WWE on Monday nights. We all know how that ended. Colby came at him. You know, I give the kid credit. He came at him. He was slapping Moose and, you know, trying to fight him. Moose looked like he didn't want to hit him at first, but then he just said, fuck it, and he pounded the shit out of the kid. Moose throws him out of the ring with ease, and he goes outside. He hooks the legs of Colby Carino like you would for a slingshot or a Boston Crab before you turn it over, and he whips him back and forth, basically like a giant swing. And he goes back and forth into the ringside barricade, smashing this kid into the barricade over and over again, back and forth, back and forth. He just killed this poor kid. Then he gave him an apron powerbomb before powerbombing him hard on the floor. I have been powerbombed before, but I was powerbombed on grass. I wasn't powerbombed on the hard floor, but when I was younger, I was in the playground, and I was up on the monkey bars. And my father was standing there, and he said, fall. Like, you know, let go, and I'll catch you. And I foolishly believed him. I'd like to think he didn't do this on purpose, and maybe I was swinging, and he just missed me. But, my father was a big guy, 6'2". I was relatively small at the time, so I find that hard to believe that he would have missed me by accident. But I let go of the monkey bars. And when I let go, I took a flat back bump on the floor. Now, there was padding. It wasn't concrete. You know, those mats they have at the playground. But unless you've ever fallen from a reasonably high distance, flat on your back, you don't know how it feels to have the wind knocked out of you. That was the first time in my life I ever had the wind knocked out of me, because he did not catch me. I fell flat back on the floor. I couldn't breathe. I thought I was dying. He was busy laughing. I think my elbow was bleeding. So I can just imagine a guy like Moose powerbombing a guy like Colby Carino. I don't care what mats you have down on the floor. This kid had to have the wind knocked out of him. Just a complete destruction. And so it was Whitmer and Page then who tossed their buddy back into the ring. They're like, come on, get back in there. And they threw Colby back inside. Moose covered him with a foot for the pin. Now, mind you, the kid's father is sitting at ringside watching all of this go down. He is pleading on commentary, stop, this has to stop. He tries to sound concerned, but at no point did I get the impression that this guy really cared that his child was about to be killed. Steve Carino must be one of those fathers I told you guys about earlier on the podcast. Main event was the Briscoes, Jay and Mark, against the House of Truth, Donovan Dijak and Jay Diesel, with Truth Martini in their corner, and the Ring of Honor television champion, Jay Lethal, on commentary. I interviewed Jay Lethal not long after he won the ROH title for the first time, way back on Sound Off 187, which is also up on our YouTube channel, by the way. Lethal won the championship a second time last April. He has been the champion ever since, nearly 430 days as the champion. He's about to beat CM Punk's mark of 434, although that was a different title, obviously. Lethal is awesome. I have no idea what TNA was thinking letting him go after all those years. I have no idea why WWE has never shown any real interest in him. He's young, he can work, he can play different characters, he's got a ton of charisma. I really just don't understand it. But their loss is Ring of Honor's gain. I thought he was great on commentary here, especially how indignant he became when Kevin Kelly dared compare his father to Papa Briscoe, both of whom I think are supposed to be at the show. I think Jay even said his father was going to be there. And the Briscoes, I know, have had their father in their corner a time or two in the past. He and Jay Briscoe, who has been the Ring of Honor world champion since September of last year, they are on a collision course. Best in the world on June 19th. They will meet champion against champion, title for title. WrestleMania 6 shit right here in the main event. Looking forward to that. Good match here. I was impressed by some of, Dijak? Dijak's offense? I think it was him. I'm not really familiar with him or Jay Diesel. Briscoes get the win with the Doomsday Device. Lethal tried to attack Jay after the match from behind, but Briscoe dropped him with the J-Driller to end the show. I think Lethal takes it on the 19th. He's my pick. I think he's walking out with the world title. So this was a good show. I enjoyed it, and there's a great tag team title match that they set up for the show this upcoming week, and I am looking forward to that and many more ROH reviews here on the Sound Off. Lucha Underground. And by the way, for those of you asking, well, what of the Wednesday shows did you think was the best? I don't know if I'm going to rank them every single week, but I will say Lucha Underground was the best show, I thought. It is still number one. I love how last week the focus of the show was Johnny Mundo, right? His first match as a heel. Prince Puma defending the Lucha Underground title against Hernandez. And the return of Mil Muertes against Phoenix. And then, of course, Bale literally being killed by the monster Matanza. This week, none of them, not a single one, were on the show. This week, they shifted the focus back to other people, the other half of the roster. The same people do not need to be on the show every single week. Lucha Underground is proof positive of that. You know, now, the one-hour format has a lot to do with that. I understand, you know, Raw's 3 hours, so it's harder for them to kind of save some people. But still, that's one of the many things I love about Lucha Underground. Chavo Guerrero is sitting in Dario Cueto's office. We learn that Chavo was hired by Cueto to kill Black Lotus, not to befriend her or protect her like he told that other masked luchador guy he was going to do. But what happened was the masked luchador guy got to her before Chavo could take care of her. And then he ended up training her to kill Dario's brother, which is where we're at now. So Dario's very upset. "How could you let this happen?" he says to Chavo. Dario is not as smart as I thought he was to hire Chavo Guerrero for a job like that. What led you to think that anything good would come from that? What did you think would happen? Of all the people to hire for a job, you hire Chavo? Chavo says he wants round-the-clock protection from Mexico in exchange for taking care of Black Lotus. Apparently the entire country. He wants protection from the entire country of Mexico. I mean, I knew gang violence down there was bad, but come on. And Cueto agrees to his request. But he's a very powerful guy. For a guy who just sits in his office all day promoting wrestling shows, he's got a lot of power. Jack Evans against Argenis. Before the match, Cueto said, "Nobody cares about Argenis." And Jack Evans lost in his first match a few weeks ago. So, to make things interesting, whoever wins this match gets one of his 7 ancient Aztec medallions. And I like that. I like the whole concept of the medallions. I don't know where it's going. I don't know if it's like some kind of freaking anime cartoon where once all 7 medallions have been won by 7 different people, they kind of interlock to create some sort of intergalactic superpower gem. I don't know what the fuck the plan is with the medallions, but what I like about it for now, it suddenly makes a nothing match like this seem important. There's something on the line. It's not just a match for the sake of having a match. So Evans won with a backslide into a bridge. Fun match, especially the part where Argenis gave Evans a blatant low blow that somehow was not called a DQ, and Evans loudly complained to the referee about his testicles. So he wins the medallion. If you're a guy listening to this show right now, at some point in the coming week, this is my challenge to you. Just one time. Everybody has to do this week at some point. I don't care if you're at work, your home, your school. Well, shouldn't be at home. You have to be in front of other people. I want you to just randomly yell out, "Testicles!" And then report back to me on what people's reaction is. It's a little fun exercise there. Maybe I'll do that at Citi Field when I go to the Legends of Wrestling show later. I'll just randomly blurt out, "Testicles." If you happen to hear that, by the way, that's me. Come say hi. Backstage, Daivari tells Big Rick he got them a Trios title match tonight. And Rick suggests, "Well, how about my cousin the Mac as our partner?" They call him Cage, then showed up and said, "I don't think so." He beat the shit out of Mac, beat his ass, took his spot. Big Rick just looks down at his cousin with this disappointed look on his face, like he let the family down. I think the biggest difference between WWE and Lucha Underground is that in WWE, they talk people to death. In Lucha Underground, they beat people to death. That's what I like about it. Elsewhere, Chavo tells Black Lotus, he's still pretending to be her friend, he tells her, "Hey, Dario Cueto agreed to give you a match, and you're going to have a match tonight." so you better get ready for it. And she kind of figures, something doesn't seem kosher about this. And sure enough, Chavo goes to attack her, and she saw it coming. And she attacked him and the remaining living members of the crew, Castro and Cisco, who came from out of nowhere to attack her. But Chavo finally manages to knock her out with a foreign object, and the three of them handcuff her. This whole fight sequence was shot like something out of a Kill Bill movie. Daivari, Big Rick, and they call him Cage, against Son of Havoc, Ivelisse, and Angelico for the Trios Tag Team titles. Ivelisse is still on crutches with her ankle in a cast. She did nothing but take a seat in the front row during the match while yelling and criticizing her teammates the whole time. So she fit right in with wrestling fans. They're back to not being on the same page. Reason that Ivelisse took a seat in the crowd and was so upset was because she kept asking to be tagged in, but they wouldn't tag her in. So she just said, fuck it, I'm going to go sit down. Fun spot of the match was Big Rick getting Angelico up for a delayed vertical suplex, and then while he is still holding him up there, he tags in Cage, who takes over. One fluid motion. They never dropped him. So now Cage has him up for a delayed vertical suplex. He does a pair of squats while still holding him up there, and finally he slams him down. That was awesome. Ivelisse gets up on the apron toward the finish. She distracts Daivari. Daivari pie faces her down. Tejano comes out. He distracts Daivari, keeping that feud alive and leading to the babyfaces getting the win and retaining their titles. It was a shooting star press by Son of Havoc for the win. Back in Dario Cueto's office, Black Lotus is tied up and gagged. Hey, I like where this is going. Cueto says he's got a seat waiting for her right across from his brother. Back in the ring, we are ready for our main event, the first ever submission match in Lucha Underground between Pentagon Jr. and Sexy Star. Matt Stryker tried to compare Sexy Star to Ronda Rousey and Danica Patrick. I don't know about that. The match itself was not bad. It was actually a well-wrestled match, but Sexy Star took, I would say, 80% of the match, and that's probably being generous. I didn't like that. You know I'm a big Pentagon Jr. fan. You know I am not a fan of the intergender matches. So you do an intergender match and you give most of it to the woman. I don't really like that at all. And she had him beat too. She had Pentagon beat with a half crab of all things when Superfly, who we have not seen since Sexy was forced to unmask him, and we thought was her friend, he runs into the ring and punches her in the face. And he then willingly hands her over to Pentagon, who seems very confused by all of this. And he delivers a package pile driver to her, and then locks her in a surfboard, and Sexy Star has no choice but to submit. It took all of that to beat Sexy Star. She's like the John Cena of Lucha Underground. Other than, or maybe I should say Nikki Bella. Other than the giving up part, of course, we got to make sure we note that. Pentagon goes to break her arm, but Vampiro throws down his headset, makes the save. The place goes nuts for him. He looks conflicted, like, what am I doing here? And then he hightails it to the back. And the show ends with a backstage vignette showing Vampiro looking at himself in the mirror in the bathroom as we hear in the background bits of his commentary from the past few months where he's made comments about how I've done bad things to good people in my life and I'm a tormented soul. He's made little comments like that over time, and it all makes sense. You know, that it all kind of came together here. It all makes sense that those little comments were leading up to this point. Like, things aren't actually done or said on this show without any attention paid to the long-term plan. What a concept. He then starts repeatedly bashing his head into the glass mirror. It doesn't bleed, so I don't know, maybe he's undead? I don't know. They're obviously building to a Pentagon versus Vampiro match, maybe on that big finale in August. I just wish they would get away from the intergender stuff, especially with Pentagon. Pentagon's awesome. He deserves better than that. Hopefully the stuff with Vampiro, they'll move him in a different direction now. Otherwise, this was another excellent episode of Lucha Underground, the best of the bunch this week, number one. There is no mailbag this week. I need to get out of here soon to head to Citi Field for that Legend show. But we do have a sad tweet. This week's sad tweet is actually a series of racist tweets posted by TNA star, or former TNA star, Jessica Havoc, that were uncovered this week. They were posted at various points between 2011 and 2013. I don't know what her employment status is right now, other than if she still is with TNA or not. All I know is she is in the middle of a WWE tryout camp right now, and this could not possibly come at a worse time for her. And under normal circumstances, if some old shit, you made one stupid comment, you made one stupid mistake, and somebody dug it up, and you know it happened to come at the absolute worst possible time, I'd have sympathy for you, I'd feel sorry for her. Not in this case, though. I'm not going to repeat the tweets, there were a whole bunch of them, you can find them on your own. But suffice to say, she does not seem to think very highly of black people. She quickly posted an apology, probably because she realized, oh shit, I better cut this off right now. In doing so, she pretty much confirmed the tweets are real. She didn't deny them. She started deleting them, but people caught on and they took screenshots. Then and only then did she decide to apologize. She said, I want to apologize wholeheartedly for the old, she put that in caps, old tweets that are being brought up right now. It was years ago, and I don't even remember tweeting half of that stuff. The stuff I do remember were jokes that were in bad taste. I was young and very new to the social media stuff, and I was very immature and just said things to make my friends laugh at the time. I am a loving, compassionate person, and I love everyone, she says. I was waiting for the, but I have black friends line, but she didn't say that. I also love the whole thing where she says, I was young. I was young and immature. Like this happened 10 years ago. It was 2 years ago. 3 years ago. Give me a break. I see a lot of websites posting headlines like WWE not likely to sign Havoc after offensive tweets revealed. Here's the thing on that. Nobody else is going to say it, so I may as well. WWE shouldn't sign her. Not because she tweeted a bunch of racist shit. They shouldn't sign her because she's terrible in the ring and she's no good. There you go. That's why they shouldn't sign her. I used to say that all the time in my Impact reviews when she would wrestle. I heard all this stuff. Ooh, Havoc's coming to TNA. Oh, this should be interesting. I wasn't really familiar with her work. And then I saw her wrestle and I'm like, that's it? That's what's so special about this woman? There's nothing special about her. She's not that good. With the quality of a lot of the women they have now in NXT, they don't need her. That's why they should pass on her. Which leads nicely into a new segment here on the podcast, one that I call Buy or Sell. This week's Buy or Sell, Eva Marie. I say buy. I really do think that Eva Marie is going to shock a lot of people. I think she's been working real hard. They're going with this idea that people hate her and you hear the fans taunting her and catcalling her. I don't think they would be putting her out there in that position unless they knew, you know, when she gets in the ring, she's going to turn a lot of heads. And whether it's Kendrick only or if she's training with Kendrick for a while and then they're going to have somebody else kind of training her and helping her, I get the sense that she really has made it a mission of hers to prove a lot of people wrong. It's almost like a challenge to her. And I think she's going to surprise a lot of people. I really do. And I would almost compare it to Candice Michelle. When Candice Michelle, who came out of the whole Diva Search thing, I'm pretty sure she was not a fan growing up. Maybe she has said, you know, something to the contrary in old interviews. I didn't go looking for old Candice Michelle interviews. I don't think she was a wrestling fan. She was probably a model or a dancer or something. And the Diva Search came along and she ended up in WWE. And she wasn't very good at all. She really was not good. Now, I'm not going to compare Candice Michelle to somebody like Trish Stratus, who went from maybe being good to being a very good, if not great, women's wrestler. But Candice Michelle went from somebody who had no experience at this whatsoever and probably didn't know what the fuck she was doing and wasn't very good to really working her ass off. I know she got hurt once or twice. She came back. She worked her ass off and she became a good wrestler. She became a perfectly good, acceptable part of what was then the Divas division in WWE, which, as dead as that division is now, is still light years ahead of where it was in 2006, 2008. But Candice Michelle worked her ass off, and she got better. And I really think it may be a similar situation here with Eva Marie. Eva Marie did not grow up as a wrestling fan. She's an athlete. She's a sports fan. And I think also that her background as an athlete will work to her advantage. I think that will make it easier for her to pick up certain things. And that coupled with the fact that she is just determined to prove the doubters and the haters wrong, I think it's very comparable to a Candice Michelle situation. Don't write her off. I really think that in the end she may turn out to be not the next Trish Stratus or anything like that. And there's no way she'll be better than Sasha Banks or Charlotte. But I think she's going to work her way up to being a very respectable diva in WWE. So I say bye on Eva Marie. If you have questions for the mailbag, which will be back here next week, email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. You can also keep tweeting at me, @solemonster, if you have any suggestions for said tweet. There have been quite a few of them this week, and last 2-3 weeks, they've all been TNA-related in some way. I mean, the Havoc stuff happened before she was in TNA, but of course she was most recently in TNA, so there's the little connection there, but keep tweeting me, @solemonster. Find us on Facebook as well. We're all over there, including our group, private discussion group. You have to apply for membership. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolemonster. Hit the subscribe button. Anytime a new video, interview, pay-per-view review goes up, book review, whatever it may be, you will be the first to know about it, but you have to be subscribed. We'll be back next weekend for episode 387. And I will have some thoughts on the Legends of Wrestling show I am leaving for here in a little bit at Citi Field. Should be interesting. Although, I don't know. The Nasty Boys and Aces and Eights. What a match. I almost want to see this match like just from a pure car crash point of view. Very anxious how that turns out. We'll be back next weekend, guys. Until then, take care of yourselves. We'll see you next time.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
The Monster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, The Solemonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.